For the last four times, I think it is, we have talked about Joseph and his brothers. Primarily talking about how Joseph is a type of Christ in the Scriptures, sold out by his family, but end up would be the one who would deliver his family. Well, when we think of Joseph and his brothers, as I've thought about this further, I think we've kind of started in the middle of the story. Today I'd like to go back to more of the first of the story of Joseph and his brothers. But in order to do that, I want to go back to Joseph's great-grandfather, Abraham, who in the beginning was called Abram. Now there was Abram, who became Abraham, and then there was Isaac, and then there was Jacob, whom God renamed Israel, and then the 12 sons of Jacob. So we go back in time, four generations, and let's pick up this story a little ahead of where we've been talking the last few Sundays. And let's go back to the time of Abraham, and let's see God's work. Let's see God's plan. Let's see God's providence. Let's see the details by which God deals with his people. I think this is just marvelous. We go back to Genesis chapter 12. Actually, the story may start at the end of Genesis 11, but Abraham was told by God, now he's still called Abram at this point in the Scriptures, and he's told by God to leave his family, to leave his country, and to go to a place that God will show him. But Abraham's a little slow in following those directions. He hangs around with his family, hangs around with him for a few years, apparently, and there's troubles that come from that. But let's pick up the story in Genesis chapter 12, and let's read the first three verses. Now the Lord had said unto Abram, Get thee out of thy country, and from thy kindred, and from thy father's house, unto a land that I will show thee. And I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee, and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. And I will bless them that bless thee, and curse him that curseth thee. And in thee shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Of all the men in the world, God chose Abram. God is God, and he had a right to do that. There's a land that's possessed, we'll find out, by 10 nations. God says, Abram, that land's going to be your land. Abram, I'm going to make out of you a great nation, and I'll give you a land to live in, and I'll be your God, and you'll be my people. Now, Abram is an old man at this point, probably 70 years old, when this promise is first made. It seems that he and his dad and his nephew, and they live in the land of Haran for about 5 years after this is told, it seems, when you start working the numbers, and we won't take the time to do that and show those things. But then by the time Abram's 75, he ends up in this land that God has promised him. He's left Terah behind, but he still has Lot with him, so he's carrying some baggage, as most of us usually do in our lives. And Abraham was the father of the faithful, but he still hasn't totally obeyed God. But that's not our story for the moment. We want to think about God choosing Abram and having a great plan in mind already about Abram. I want to go jump ahead, way ahead. I want to jump 430 years ahead. I want to read to you a verse in Exodus chapter 12. Verse 41. It came to pass at the end of the 430 years, even the self same day, it came to pass that all the host of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt. 430 years, it says, to the day, to the self same day. We don't know what day of the year it was, but my Bible says that on a certain day of the year, God made Abram a promise. And 430 years, at the anniversary of that day, God fulfilled that promise and brought a great nation out of a nation and had them heading to the promised land. To the exact day. Now, I can't prove that to the day. I think I could run the numbers on the years and show you it was 130 years or 430 years. But we won't take time to do that. But the Bible says it's the same day.
And I believe God knew what he was talking about when he wrote that in the Bible, that it was the self-same David and the Holy Spirit inspired those words to be written. And I believe God knew what he was talking about when he made the promise to Abram, and I believe God at that point knew what day they'd come out of there and just exactly how long they'd be in that situation that he had described before they finally received that land. You see, Abram never got the promised land as a possession. He wandered around in it as a stranger and a pilgrim, but had no real place to call home. The only property that I can find that he ever possessed in that promised land was a field that he bought that had a cave in it, and the reason he bought that was to bury his wife, Sarah. And that's the only possession I find that Abram ever had in the promised land. But God would tell Abraham, and hopefully we'll get to that he would tell him that you won't ever possess it, and your son won't ever possess it, and his son won't ever possess it, but in the fourth generation. They'll be led into bondage, and then they'll stay in bondage for a while, and then they'll come out finally, and at the end of 430 years to the selfsame day, the possession came to be a part of God's children, part of God's plan, the fulfillment of God's plan. So now we have this plan of God, the stage is set, a promise has been made to Abram, and he's to have lots of kids, it seems, or at least lots of seed. He won't have lots of kids, but there'll be a lot of descendants that'll come out of him. But you see, he's an old man already when this promise is made, and he has no children. Let's continue the story. We've got an exciting stage set, it seems to me. Can God pull this off? There's no doubt. Let's go and look at Genesis 15. We started there in Genesis 12. Let's look at Genesis 15, too. And Abraham said, Lord God, what wilt thou give me, seeing I go childless, and the steward of my house is this Eliezer of Damascus? And Abram said, Behold, to me thou hast given no seed, and lo, one born in my house is mine heir. And behold, the word of the Lord came unto him, saying, This shall not be thine heir, but he that shall come forth out of thine own bowels shall be thine heir. And he brought him forth abroad and said, Look now toward heaven, and tell the stars, if thou be able to number them. And he said unto him, So shall thy seed be. You see, it's been a few years, and Abram's not getting any younger. And he comes to God, and he expresses his feelings, his concerns, he's wondering about the whole situation. He said, God, my days are probably getting a little close here, and it seems that we're cutting it kind of short on time. And right now, I don't have any children. And if I were to die, there's one of my servants. He'll be the one who will inherit what I have. And you've told me this, Lord, that I'm supposed to have a child, and I'm going to be a father of a great nation, and that I'll have a lot of descendants. And what's going on here, God? What's happening? God says, No, sir, Abram. That one who is your servant, he's not going to be your heir. You're going to have a child of your own that'll come out of your bowels. And then he takes him outside and he says, Look now up towards the sky. And it's night, and I believe it's a clear night. And you can see forever, so to speak. And he tells Abram, Look now toward heaven and tell the stars. Start counting, Abram, and tell me how many stars are up there. If thou be able to number them, tell me. Tell the stars if thou be able to number them. And he said unto him, So shall thy seed be. You'll not be able to number them either, Abram. It'll be numberless. It'll be beyond man to ever get a number on how many your descendants will be. Only God could count the stars, and only God could know the number of your descendants, Abram. Well, there's a reassurance. God had told him once. You know, sometimes God tells us once and tells us again and tells us time and again. We have sort of thick heads sometimes and lack of faith sometimes. Now remember, Abram's the father of the faithful. But he hadn't totally obeyed God, and now he's questioning whether it's going to all work out, God. And then at that point in that same chapter, Genesis 15, 13, And he said unto Abram, God said to Abram, Know of a surety. You be sure about this, Abram. You can count on this. Know of a surety that thy seed shall be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years. This is from the time of Isaac. He says, Your seed will be in a land that's not theirs and be afflicted 400 years. By the time Isaac's born, Abraham will have been in the land of Canaan 25 years and the land of Haran 5 years before that. So there's 30 years that make up the 430 years to the selfsame day. But he said once Isaac gets here, now it's not all going to be in Egypt. He's going to still be in a strange land when he's in the land of Canaan, you see. And he's going to have fears, and Jacob's going to have fears after him, and they're going to live in a land where it's just one family and nations surrounding them, and they're really homeless and have no place to call their own and no property of their own. And he said that's going to go on for 400 years, where they'll not have the nation that'll be their nation. But one day I'll give it to them after 400 years. Let's read that again. God said to Abram, know of a surety, be sure about this, that thy seed shall be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years. And also that nation whom they shall serve will I judge. Now he's talking about Egypt. That nation whom they shall serve will I judge, and he sure did. And afterward shall they come out with great substance. They would come out carrying the riches of Egypt with them. We're going to get to that story, Lord willing. Now we won't get to that part today. But that's the fulfillment of the promise. That they'll serve, and it'll be under hard labor, and they'll be slaves. But at my appointed day, they'll come out, and they'll come out with great spoil, and they'll have the riches of Egypt, carrying those riches with them as they leave that land, a nation that comes out of a nation. And also that nation whom they shall serve will I judge, and afterward shall they come out with great substance, and thou shalt go to thy fathers in peace. Speaking to Abram now. You're going to go to your fathers in peace. You'll die in this land, but you'll die a peaceful death. Thou shalt go to thy fathers in peace. Thou shalt be buried in a good old age. You're going to live a few more years, but you'll be buried in this land. But in the fourth generation, they shall come hither again, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full. The wickedness of the nations that I'm going to give you, these nations in this land, their wickedness is going to wax worse and worse. And when their wickedness finally gets to the point where I've had it up as far as I can take and their iniquity is full, then I will punish, I will destroy them, and at the same time that I destroy them, I'll give their land to your descendants, Abram. There's the promise again. As the stars of the heaven your seed will be, this land will be your land. But it'll be not yours, but your descendants. Let's read in the 18th verse of that same 15th chapter. In the same day, the Lord made a covenant with Abraham. That's a contract, unbreakable contract. The Lord made a covenant with Abraham, saying, unto thy seed have I given this land from the river of Egypt unto the great river, the river Euphrates. You see, when they came out across that Red Sea, the river of Egypt, and crossed into that land, they were in their land that God had given them at that point. From that river, the river Euphrates, God says to Abram, this is your descendants' land. Under your seed, I'll give this land. In the same day, the Lord made a covenant with Abram, saying, unto thy seed have I given this land, from the river of Egypt unto the great river, the river Euphrates. Listen to this, 10 nations. 10 nations. The Kenites and the Kenizzites and the Kadmonites and the Hittites and the Perizzites and the Rephaims and the Amorites and the Canaanites and the Girgashites and the Jebusites. 10 nations now possess this land from the river Egypt to the river Euphrates, and I'll give you every one of those nations' lands at the end of the time that I've appointed. God's in charge. God's telling the future here. God's telling Abram just how it's going to be. Abram's worried about it. He doesn't see how this is going to happen. He's old. He just can't figure it all out. So what Abraham eventually decides to do, after probably about 11 years of wandering around, a nomad in this land, and still no children, it appears, if we're doing the numbers right, that Abram is now about 86, and Sarah would be 76. Sarai, she's still called at this point, Genesis 16:1. They develop a plan, Abram and his wife, how they're going to help God with God's plan. I want to tell you, my friends, God doesn't need help with God's plans. But they figure they're going to help him out. There's still folks who think that God has to have help with his plans. My friends, God's plans come out to the self same day when he says they're going to come out without the help of man. So here we go, Genesis 16:1. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, bare him no children. And she had an handmaid, an Egyptian, whose name was Hagar. And Sarai said unto Abram, Behold, now the Lord hath restrained me from bearing. I pray thee, go in unto my maid. It may be that I may obtain children by her. And Abram hearkened, that is, listened to the voice of Sarai. Oh, my goodness. They think God can't do it. Sarai has a plan. I'll tell you what. I've been your faithful wife all these years. But here's what we need to do. You need to go in to the maid here, to the servant. And you need to have relations with her so that you might have a child by her. And I guess that's the only way this is going to work. And Abram listened to her. And he followed her suggestion. And I want to tell you, that was problems in their generation, and I think that's been problems for many generations since then. They were trying to help God, and God didn't need any help. Well, that handmaid Hagar has that son Ishmael. But God comes back in Genesis 17:15, and God said unto Abraham, now his name's been changed. As for Sarai, thy wife, thou shalt not call her name Sarai, but Sarah shall be her name. God has just changed the name of Abram to Abraham, and now he changes the name of Sarai to Sarah. Sarah shall be her name. And I will bless her, and give thee a son also of her. Yea, I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations. Kings of people shall be of her. Of Sarah shall come the nation. Of Sarah shall come kings. Of Sarah, that's who the mother of my people will be, is Sarah, not Hagar. Not through Ishmael, but through a promised child, Isaac, I'll give you this nation. I'll give you these descendants. I'll give you this number of people that the stars cannot number, or that man cannot number as the stars are. He says, I will bless her and give thee a son also of her. Yea, I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations. Nations, kings of people shall be of her. Then Abraham fell upon his face and laughed and said in his heart, Shall a child be born unto him that is 100 years old? And shall Sarah that is 90 years old bear? Abraham laughs at the whole idea. And Abraham said unto God, Oh, that Ishmael might live before thee. And God said, Sarah, thy wife, shall bear thee a son indeed. It's for real. It's going to happen. Sarah, thy wife, shall bear thee a son indeed, and thou shalt call his name Isaac. And I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant, and with his seed after him. No, not Ishmael, Abraham. It's not going to be Ishmael. It's going to be the promised child, Isaac. Ishmael wasn't the child I promised you. Ishmael was the child you came up with on your idea. But I promised you Isaac through Sarah. And that's where the lineage will be. And that's the seed I'm talking about. And it'll be Isaac's descendants that get the promised land, not Ishmael. At 90 years old, God comes back. Two angels and Jesus appear before Abraham at this point. And then in this tent there, they're sitting out in front of the tent, and Sarah's inside the tent. And these two angels and Jesus, Genesis 18:9, they said unto him, Where is Sarah thy wife? And he said, Behold, in the tent. And he said, this is God, this is Jesus, an appearance of God to Abraham, personal appearance. Two angels and Jesus appearing to Abraham. That happened a few times in the Old Testament. He said, I will certainly return unto thee according to the time of life. That means about 9 months. I will return unto thee according to the time of life. I think that's the selfsame day. I don't think God's guessing when it's going to be. I think Jesus knew exactly when it's going to be. According to the time of life, at the exact number of days that it takes for a child to form in his mama's belly. I will certainly return unto thee according to the time of life, and lo, Sarah thy wife shall have a son. And Sarah heard it in the tent door, which was behind him. Sarah's kind of inside that tent listening, you see. It's kind of a neat conversation to listen to, I suppose. It's God and two angels talking to Abraham, her husband, outside, and she's sort of eavesdropping a little bit. She might think of it that way, but she's listening from behind him in the tent door. Now, Abraham and Sarah, it says, were old and well stricken in age. They were old and they were stricken with age. They were showing their age. They were their age. It wasn't that they were some kind of miraculous pair that were still had drunk of the fountain of youth or something and were still young. They were old. They really were old. Now, Abraham and Sarah were old and well stricken in age. I think we know what that means, to see somebody 90 and somebody else 100 years old. They were old and well stricken in age. And it ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of women. I think we should understand what that means. She had passed the point of being able, naturally, physically speaking, to bear children. That part of her life was behind her. She wasn't able to do that anymore. That happens at a certain age, different age with different women, but that happens. And Sarah's well past that age at 90. She's past the age that it's impossible now for her to have a child, you'd say, but not with God, you know. In her mind, it was. In Abraham's mind, it seems that it was. Abraham and Sarah were old and well stricken in age, and it ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of women. Therefore, considering all those things, therefore Sarah laughed within herself. Now, she didn't laugh out loud, but she laughed on the inside. Yeah. Likely story. Sarah laughed within herself, saying, "After I am waxed old, shall I have pleasure? Is it possible now for me to know the pleasure of a child? After I am waxed old, shall I have pleasure? My Lord being old also, besides me, it's him too, you see. He's kind of over the hill too, and this isn't going to work. I guess we just missed our chance. And it would have been pleasurable. I would have enjoyed a child. It would have been such a blessing. And God did promise such a thing. But you know, it's been too late now for a good while. And we kind of knew that. And we sort of made that plan back when gave Hagar to Abraham. And all these things may be running through her mind. I'll tell you what the Scriptures say. And we'll not put anything else in her mind that the Scriptures don't say. It says, "Therefore Sarah laughed within herself, saying, After I am waxed old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also. And the Lord said unto Abraham, Wherefore did Sarah laugh? Wherefore, why did Sarah laugh, saying, Shall I of a surety bear a child which am old? You say, this is for sure that I'm going to bear a child? Yeah, that's right. And she laughed, except on the inside. But you see, Jesus knows what's happening on the inside, too. He knows the thoughts of our hearts. He knows our doubts and our fears. And he looks at Abraham and questions Abraham about Abraham's wife, Sarah, and said, Why did Sarah laugh? And why did she say within herself, Shall I for real, shall I of a surety? You say this is a sure thing? Shall I for sure bear a child? A Lord, shall I for sure bear a child which am old? And then Jesus says to Abraham, Is anything too hard for the Lord? What a thought. Is anything too hard for the Lord? At the time appointed, I will return unto thee, says Jesus to Abraham. At the time appointed, I will return to thee according to the time of life. You mark the days on your calendar. According to the time of life, and Sarah shall have a son. That's pretty certain, pretty sure, of a surety. It'll happen, because nothing's too hard for the Lord. And at the appointed time, I will return unto thee according to the time of life, and Sarah shall have a son. Then Sarah denied, saying, I laugh not, for she was afraid. Then she denies it. Oh, it would have been better probably if she confessed it. It's hard to deny our sins before God because he knows our hearts. And if he says that we're wrong, and if he tells us even in our hearts that we're wrong, then don't deny it. Confess it. Now, I'm guilty of this too, but Sarah denied it. Oh, I didn't laugh. Well, she didn't out loud maybe, but she did, and he knew it. And she knew it too, I feel like. Then Sarah denied, saying, I laughed not, for she was afraid. And he said, No, nay, but thou didst laugh. You did laugh, and you know it. And I know it. Now let's look at one more thing before we close. The promised child, Isaac, it happened just like God said it would. Genesis 21:21, and the Lord visited Sarah as he had said, just like he said. And the Lord did unto Sarah as he had spoken. He did unto her. It was the Lord who arranged this thing and caused this miracle to happen. And it wasn't too hard for the Lord. For Sarah conceived and bare Abraham a son in his old age at the set time of which God had spoken to him. And Abraham called the name of his son that was born unto him, whom Sarah bare to him, Isaac. God bless you. What a start to a story. Lord willing, we'll pick that up again next week, and we'll start right there, and we'll see what happens with this little baby Isaac. But things are coming around just like God says, don't you know? We sort of started out a few weeks ago talking about Joseph and his brothers. And then last week we backtracked just a little bit, so to speak, and we began to talk about Abraham, the great-grandfather of Joseph and his brothers. And what we began to try to show last week was God's providence in turning a family into a great nation. Who could have imagined that a man that lived in a place called Ur of the Chaldees, a man God chose as his man, not because of anything special in Abram. God says later on in the book of Ezekiel that it wasn't anything special about him. Your father was an Amorite and your mother a Hittite, speaking of the nation of Israel. You came from nothing. You were as that babe in the wilderness. Nobody cared for you. Nobody swaddled you. Nobody cleaned you up. And I started from that and made a nation, God says, from Abram and Sarai. And God moved them across into a land that he would show them but not give to them. And multiple promises that we talked about last week. How that exactly to the day, God had a plan made whereby he would, through Abram, make a great people. So many descendants that they would be compared to the stars of heaven that no man could number. One particular descendant that would come from Abram, through whom all nations of earth be blessed, that's Jesus Christ, my friends. God is starting a lineage here to bring Jesus into the world. But God is also starting a nation that'll be his people. He'll be their God and they'll be his people. He makes this promise to an old man, Abraham. It's a hopeless promise. There's no way this can work out. Abraham laughs about it. Sarah laughs about it. And finally, when he's 100 and she's 90, they have that little baby Isaac. Now, they've already tried it their own way and brought Ishmael into this world through Hagar the handmaid. But he wasn't the promised child. He wasn't God's chosen. God chose Abraham, and then God would have a promised child from Abraham. Not just any child would do. It would be the promised child, God's choice in the matter. We go to Romans chapter 9, and we read about that. Romans chapter 9, verse 7. Neither because they are the seed of Abraham are they all children. You see, everybody that came out of Abraham's loins wasn't the child God was talking about. They weren't all counted to be children according to God's choice in the matter. According to God's election, there was one, Isaac, that was the promised child, the one called of the Lord. Neither because they are the seed of Abraham are they all children, but in Isaac, period, God's choice. In Isaac shall thy seed be called. All those promises to the seed of Abraham were through Isaac. In Isaac shall thy seed be called. The ones I was speaking of are the ones through Isaac. That is, they which are the children of the flesh, these are not the children of God. Comparing God's choice of Isaac over Ishmael to God's promised elect people over ones who are called the children of the flesh. They which are the children of the flesh, these are not the children of God, but the children are of the promise are counted for the seed. For this is the word of promise, at this time will I come and Sarah shall have a son. You remember that promise we talked about last week? God said, at the appointed time. When Jesus is talking to Abraham, he says, at the appointed time, at the certain number of days, at the set time that I've said, according to the time of life, that child will be born. Sarah was 90, Abraham 100, and at the time Jesus planned it, at the very day, Isaac, the promised child, came into the world. And through him would be the seed. And through him would be all the promises. At the time I appoint, I will come and Sarah shall have a son. So that's sort of where we got to last week. Sarah had that little baby Isaac, according to God's promise. The chosen one, Abram, had the chosen one, Isaac. And now Isaac grows up. And Abraham, old man now, really old man now, sends back to Ur of the Chaldees, to the family of his father's people, to seek for Isaac a wife. And that wife will end up being Rebekah. But the 24th chapter of Genesis tells a sweet story again of the providence of God in the matter. Abraham tells that servant, said, you put your hand under my thigh and you solemnly swear that you'll go find of my father's people a bride for my son Isaac. And you just leave it up to the Lord. That servant says, what if, what if? And Abraham said, just don't what if. Don't you get a lamb, one from this country. You get one from over there. There'll be one God has in mind. You go find her and you bring her back. Now that servant gets over there to that land that he doesn't know anything about. And he gets to that place that he's never been before. And he comes up there and he's got 10 camels with him. And he comes up to a well of water. And he comes up with what you might think is a right harebrained idea. But ain't God awesome? That servant says, now here's my plan, God. He's talking to God about this situation that he doesn't know what to do next. He said, I'm going to stand here by this well. And when the young girls come up here, I'm going to ask, would you give me a drink of water? And here's my plan, God. Whichever one of those maidens that come up, and I ask if you'll give me a drink of water, and she gives me a drink, but then comes back and says to me, let me get some water for your camels too. I said, that'll be the one. Well, now 10 camels can drink a whole lot, I'll bet you. I'm no expert on camels, but they can travel a long way across the desert, and I guess the reason they travel a long way is because they can drink a whole lot before they start. And they've already traveled a long way, and they've got to where they're going, and I'll bet those camels are pretty thirsty, and there's 10 of them there. So here comes the first girl that comes up. The first girl. He didn't have to stand there for any 6 weeks waiting for this thing to happen. The first girl that comes up, this servant of Abraham, he asked her, said, could you spare a little water and give me a drink? And she takes her pitcher off her shoulder, and she gives him a drink of water, and then lo and behold, what an incredible offer she makes. She said, how about I water all those camels for you too? And that old servant begins to thank God. And he goes home with her and finds out he's just the right girl that they've been looking for, from just the right family, from Abraham's kindred, from his people, that he'd been told to leave, but now he sends this servant back to find one of those kindred, a bride for his daughter, Isaac. And Rebecca says, they ask her, said, will you go? And she said, I'll go. They said, how about stay 10 days? She said, no, I'm anxious to go right now. And she goes back and she meets Isaac. And you see, now there's a bride for Isaac by God's providence. But I think it's about 20 years that they're married and there's no little boys born. There are no children born. But what about this promise that God had given to Isaac too? He gave it to Abraham and he gave it to Isaac after him, that in thy seed there'll be great nations and all this kind of stuff. And where's these nations going to be, God? Eventually, after 20 years, God opens the womb of Rebekah. But she's got twin boys in that womb. Twin boys that the scriptures say even fight in the womb. And those twin boys, one of them's God's choice, and the other one is not. Let's read Romans 9 and 10. We just read Romans chapter 9 up through verse 9. Let's read verse 10. And not only this, referring back to Isaac being the chosen one over Ishmael, Isaac the promised child, now we have Jacob the chosen child. And not only this, but when Rebekah had also conceived by one, even by our father Isaac, while those boys are in her womb after she's conceived of their father Isaac, for the children being not yet born, neither having done any good or evil, that the purpose of God according to election might stand, not of works, but of him that calleth. You see, God is the one that calls. God is the one that calls the shots, and God is the one that calls the children, and God is the one that elects his own, and God is the one that makes the choices. And it's according to election, not of works, but of him that calleth. It was said unto her, said unto Rebekah, the elder shall serve the younger. As it is written, Jacob have I loved, but Esau have I hated. So here comes two more boys. We had Ishmael and Isaac in the generation before, but Isaac was the one God called. He was the promised child. We have Esau and Jacob in this generation, but Jacob is the chosen child, the elect of God. That promise that God had made to Abraham, and that promise that God had reaffirmed to Isaac, God reaffirms that same promise to Jacob after he grows up. There's a lot of good stories about Jacob growing up, but we don't have time for those. It wasn't that Jacob was such a special boy, you know. He lied to his daddy and stole from his brother and connived with his mother. This was the chosen one, the one God loved. It wasn't according to his works. It was according to God's choice. But he grows up and God watches over him, and he flees for his life, quite honestly, as he escapes the hands of his brother who has sworn that he'll kill him. And he goes back to that land where they came from. And he goes back to that family of Abraham. And he goes back over there to Laban, who has two daughters. Now, he loves Rachel, but Laban tricks him and gives him Leah to start with. He works 7 more years, and he gets Rachel. And then there's 2 handmaids that become involved in this situation. And of those 4 women, Jacob will father 12 boys. 12 boys from that one man, Jacob. Now, we had one generation where Abraham had Isaac, and he was the promised child. And the next generation, Isaac had Jacob, and Jacob was the promised child. And now Jacob has 12 boys, and all of them are part of the plan. You see, the first 2 generations, there was only one of the 2 that was part of the plan. And now we start to see this seed multiply. You see, as long as each dad just had 1 boy, it wasn't going to multiply very quick, was it? But now we've got multiplication. We've got things growing quick. We've got a big family now. There's 12 boys. Their names are listed in Genesis 35. The sons of Leah, Reuben. It's Jacob's firstborn, Reuben was. And Simeon, and Levi, and Judah, and Issachar, and Zebulun. Those 6 of Leah. The sons of Rachel, Joseph and Benjamin. The sons of Bilhah, Rachel's handmaid, Dan and Naphtali. And the sons of Zilpah, Leah's handmaid, Gad and Asher. These are the sons of Jacob, which were born unto him in that land of Padan Aram. Now then, those boys grow up, or they're pretty much grown up. Joseph, though, he's the second to the youngest. He's just 17 years old. When we come back sort of where we started a few weeks ago, when his brothers sell him into bondage. Genesis 37:28. Then there passed by Midianites, merchantmen, and they drew and lifted up Joseph out of the pit, and sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver, and they brought Joseph into Egypt. You remember, they hated Joseph. They were jealous of him. He had dreamed those dreams, how that they would bow down to him, and they hated him that much more for that. And they had this opportunity to sell him. Of their wicked hands, they sold him to these slave traders who took Joseph into the land of Egypt. A young man, perhaps just a boy yet. A big old boy, but he's 17 years old, and he's kind of grown, but he's kind of not. That's pretty young to be sold as a slave, to be separated from your family, to be sent off into Egypt. I imagine that was a long ride he took with those slave traders getting down there to Egypt. But he gets there, and he was brought down to Egypt, it says in Genesis 39:1. And Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down there. And the Lord was with Joseph. He was a slave, but the Lord was still with him. Later in that same chapter, Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison. After Joseph hadn't done anything wrong. He had stood up for what was right. And he was falsely accused, and he was thrown into prison. But it says again, the Lord showed mercy on Joseph and was with him. So now this young man, he's been a slave, and he's now a prisoner in the king's prison. But you see, that's going to put him just in the right place, because God's still got a plan. You remember God's plan? 400 years it was going to take, but he'd make of the seed of Abraham a great nation and give them the land from the river Egypt to the river Euphrates, but that'd be 400 years later. But this nation isn't a nation yet. And this nation is still one family of 12 boys. But one of those boys now, he's been lost, they think. His father thinks he's dead. Jacob thinks he's gone forever. Thinks a wild beast has killed him, but things are happening in Egypt that God's still in charge of. And God's still directing the plan. So now then, Pharaoh has a dream. And there had been 2 men in that prison with Joseph, the baker and the butler. And Joseph had interpreted their dreams. And the one who's released and put back into service with Pharaoh in his house, he forgets to tell Pharaoh about this man in the prison who can interpret dreams. Well, Pharaoh has a dream, and at that point, that butler remembers the dreamer. The dreamer of dreams who can interpret dreams. And he says, oh yeah, I was supposed to mention him to you. He asked me to bring his case towards you, but there's a man in that prison that can interpret dreams. They bring Joseph up, and standing before Pharaoh, he tells him the exact details of those two dreams. That there'll be 7 years of great famine. And then the 7 years of great plenty. And then 7 years of great famine. And at that point, Pharaoh says, what do we need to do, Joseph? You seem like a wise man. Joseph said, here's what we need to do. You need to put somebody in charge. You need to collect all the food that you can get. And there'll be a lot of food. There'll be sort of an overflow. The markets will be flooded with the food because it'll be so abundant and we can get it all real cheap. I mean, we're talking some economics here. And Joseph advises him how he can become the man in charge, really. He's already the Pharaoh, but he says, I can show you how you can have everything. When you get the food and all the food that'll be through the years of famine, you'll have it in your storehouses. And then you can sell that food and get everybody's money. Well, that's a good plan. And Pharaoh says, who's smarter than you? And he puts Joseph in charge, second in command, only under Pharaoh. And that famine comes after 7 years, just like Joseph interpreted the dream, just like God planned it. Everything's falling right in place. But the famine, you see, is beyond Egypt. It's over there where the other brothers are and where Jacob is and where Joseph's family is still over there in the land of Canaan wandering around as strangers and pilgrims. That land is famished too, and there's no food there. So the brothers come to Egypt to buy corn. But you see, Joseph's in charge of selling all the corn. Joseph recognizes them, knows who they are, but they don't recognize him. They bow to him just like he said they would in the dream. Just like he prophesied, they do bow to him. They swore they never would, but they did. So Joseph sends food back for the family, for his family. And he knows what he's doing, but they don't know that it's been Joseph that's given them that food. They think this harsh ruler of Egypt has been dealt with them kind of harshly, and he did. He kept one of them as a prisoner. And he told him, if you ever come back, you better bring Benjamin. Benjamin hadn't come that first time, that littlest brother that Jacob loved so much that he wouldn't run a risk of losing him, so he didn't let him go. But then about a year later, it seems, they run out of food again. They've got to come back. And they tell Jacob, the father of these other brothers, dude, said we can't go back unless we take Benjamin. He's already kept Simeon, and he says that we're spies. And if we don't bring Benjamin, he says, that's the only way I'll let you back in, if you bring Benjamin to prove. So finally, Judah says, I'll be a surety for him. I'll make sure nothing happens to him. I'll offer myself, and I would die before I'd let him die. And under that promise, Jacob the father lets Benjamin go back with him. Well, they go back, and this time after a sequence of events that we don't have time to get into, but it's a marvelous story. Joseph kind of manipulating them, and they're bowing to him, and they're begging him, and they're pleading with him, and he accuses Benjamin of stealing the silver cup that belongs to Joseph, the one second in command in Egypt. And he says, I'm going to keep Benjamin. I'm going to keep Benjamin. And Judah had made that promise. And Judah makes an appeal that we'll try to maybe do a session on that before we get through. It's a great story. That's a type of Christ too, when Judah makes that appeal. Said, keep me and let him go. And at that, Joseph's heart breaks. And he begins to weep. And he reveals himself to his brothers. And he said, I'm Joseph that you sold. And of course, they're really nervous now. They begin to really beg and bow and plead now. When they realize, and it's been haunting them, the scripture described, and they say at some point through this story, did we not see the anguish and hear him beg? And we sold him anyway, and they're still haunted by their past sins, and now they face their brother that they'd sold into bondage. And he has full power to destroy every one of them. He's second in command in Egypt. But he says, you go back, and you bring all the little ones, and you bring your wives, and you bring daddy, and you bring all of them back to Egypt with you. And you come back, the whole family, and I'll take care of you. He says, there's still 5 more years of this famine, and you're not going to make it unless you come back. But you see, I've got only food that's left here is in my hands, and I'm in charge, and I'll take care of you. And they come back and they tell Jacob the father, Joseph's yet alive, and he's a ruler in Egypt. And Jacob passes out. He faints. And he comes to and he's revived. And he sees all the loaded wagons that they've come back with of all the great things that Joseph has sent back. And he's convinced. And they load up this little family. Well, by this time they're not a little family. His family goes, they're a pretty big family. There's 11 brothers and and there's Dad, and all the wives and the little children, such as that, they come back. Head back into Egypt. And Jacob's family, Joseph's family, the seed of Abraham, the seed of Isaac, through yet another miraculous, I suppose, sequence of events, got in charge. That group of people, that one little family, they come and they stand before Pharaoh himself. And Joseph tells them what to say to him, these brothers. When you go stand before Pharaoh, you tell him that we've always been shepherds. Our family, we've always herded sheep. That's our job. But you know, I don't know why it is. I don't know why it was. But the scriptures plainly say that shepherds and sheep herders were an abomination to the Egyptians. They didn't really want to have anything to do with anybody that was a shepherd. I don't know why that was, but that's the way it was. The Bible says that's the way it was. So you know what they willingly do at that point? They're happy just to separate themselves from this bunch of abominable shepherds. And they give them, according to Joseph's ruling, they get the choice part of Egypt, the little section of the land that goes by the name Goshen. And this little family, again, a little family in a way, compared to a whole nation. But these 11 brothers and Dad and all the wives and all the youngins, they get an isolated portion of Egypt called Goshen. And the Egyptians stay separated from them and don't have anything to do with them. And in this God-appointed isolation, they will grow into a great nation. A great nation. A nation of perhaps about 2.5 million people will leave that land at the end of the 400 years that God had appointed. Not exactly sure where we are in the middle of that 400 years when they all get moved to Goshen, but the stage is set. And the family begins to grow and grow and grow. And generation after generation have multiple sons and multiple daughters. And they're isolated, and the bloodline will remain, quote unquote, pure, if you want to think about it that way. God's people. God's family. God's chosen man, Abram. God's chosen promised child, Isaac. God's chosen twin, Jacob. 12 sons of Jacob. From there will come hundreds of thousands in a few generations. Not too many, quite honestly, I don't believe. And God has a plan that's panning out just exactly according to God's appointed, predetermined counsel. And at the appointed day, the selfsame day that God had planned it when he first spoke to Abraham, they'll come out of that land. Genesis 15:20. Let's close. Jacob has died. They're all in Goshen. The brothers now are very troubled. Since Dad's gone, they're afraid Joseph will get vengeance and get even with them for what they did to him. Genesis 50:20. As for you, you thought evil against me, Joseph tells his brothers. But God meant it unto good, to bring to pass as it is this day, to save much people alive. Now therefore fear ye not, I will nourish you and your little ones. And he comforted them and spake kindly unto them. And Joseph dwelt in Egypt, he and his father's house, and Joseph lived 110 years. God has a plan. Joseph recognized that. These boys, it was mean and wicked and evil what they did. But God was working it to bring to pass a nation that would eventually come out of a nation. God is real, and God does his will.